you guys. Welcome to my Flickers of Fear show. If you're new here, you might my background usually does not look like this. So regulars of the show will know that I'm in the middle of moving at the moment, so that's why the walls look very bare and the lighting looks really weird. And it probably sounds like kind of echoey too, because all my soundproofing is already moved to the new house. Hopefully won't have too many subsequent videos that look like this, because should be all moved in by next week. But so please forgive the really ugly looking background, but I really wanted to get all my videos out in a timely fashion, so that's what we're gonna do. Now, on this show, we are talking about yet another one of my very favorite classic horror movies from the 1960s, much as how I talked about The Haunting a week or two ago. This is the 1965 Roman Polanski film, Repulsion. You know, before we get into it, yes, Roman Polanski is a shitty person. I don't defend, like, anything that he did, obviously, but if we only consumed art from people that weren't shitty, we wouldn't really have much to choose from. So, you know, he is a brilliant filmmaker. He's just not a very good person. So let's say it that way. And it's ironic too, because this particular film really deals a lot with sexual repression, rape, and it's like from a feminine perspective. So it's just kind of interesting that someone with his personal history and his personal failings, let's call it that, can so accurately and almost like empathetically like portray this kind of story, which kind of blows my mind a little bit. And it's, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird juxtaposition, I suppose. So as I said, this was actually his second feature film, his first being Knife in the Water, and this was actually his first English language film. This is also the first film in his so-called apartment trilogy. Second of those being Rosemary's Baby from 1968, and the third of them being The Tenant from 1976. Both of those are also brilliant movies. We reviewed The Tenant, a long time ago. One of my favorite movies in the 1970s. I can't remember if we did Rosemary's Baby or not. We probably did, but it might have just been one of those ones that it's just so popular and so many people have talked about it that we might not have gotten around to it, because that happens with our channel sometimes. Because I try to, you know, I do kind of like the big heavy hitters like of horror, but I like to kind of like go and do ones that maybe aren't quite as well known. And I think this one definitely fits that bill. So this is, it's filmed in black and white, obviously. It's kind of like Roman Polanski was actually really, really good at portraying a descent into madness. He was very good at portraying paranoia. He was very good at portraying kind of like the warped worldview of somebody that, maybe wasn't entirely mentally stable. In the same way that he played the main character in The Tenant, and in a lot of ways, this movie and that movie are kind of similar in the sense that The Tenant, you have him playing someone who moves into this apartment and then slowly starts either going insane, or maybe the apartment is, there's something wrong with the apartment, or maybe there's something else going on. And this is sort of a little bit like that, in the sense that it's kind of like in one confined space, and you're very much, not only are you confined in the space, but you're also confined in the mindset of the main protagonist, who may or may not be mentally falling apart. In this case, she completely is. They don't make the main character of Repulsion. I find her a very sympathetic character. You know, he doesn't make any bones that, yes, she's disintegrating mentally, but it's not really her fault. And there's also kind of some hints through, it's implied that there is a reason for her mental disintegration and her, you know, mental instability. So this movie follows a young woman named Carol, who's played by the beautiful, impossibly beautiful, Catherine Deneuve. Now, Catherine Deneuve was only 21 when she made this movie. I think this was her first major film role, if I'm not mistaken. It's interesting that he chose someone so physically flawless to sort of like highlight the juxtaposition between what she looked like on the outside and how people perceived her from the outside and what was really going on inside that no one could see, because they couldn't see past her perfect exterior, I guess. So she plays Carol. She's Belgian, and she's living in London in kind of a scuzzy looking flat with her sister, Helen. Now, even from the beginning of the movie, you can tell Carol is a little bit, not, she's just a little bit odd. She's very, very quiet. You know, she's very introverted. She's not real talkative, not real gregarious or outgoing. And she really does seem to have a fear or a kind of repugnance toward men in general. And this is sort of highlighted too during the movie, because every time she walks around, she has like all these creepy dudes like leering at her. And, you know, most of the dudes in this, it's, like I said, interestingly, because Roman Polanski directed it, most of the dudes in this are, you know, varying degrees of creepy, even from like mildly creepy to like full on rapist creepy. So, you know what I mean? So you can almost kind of like understand. That's what I think is interesting, even though she's clearly mentally unstable, perhaps even schizophrenic. I think that's kind of like what's hinted at, like as the movie goes on. But you almost can't really blame her. You know what I mean? Just like the way that men approach her, just the way the whole, you know, the way the whole society sees her. So you can kind of see why she acts the way she does, even though it's like taken to, you know, a much higher degree than perhaps a normal person would be at. So at the start, like I said, she's kind of this mousy. She works as a manicurist. She works like in a salon. And her sister has this boyfriend named Michael, who's kind of also a skeez. And it's implied later on that he's actually married to someone else. So he's like stepping out on his wife, like seeing Helen, the sister, on the side. And so Michael's been staying over at their shared apartment. And he does just like obnoxious stuff. Like he's always in the bathroom and she wants to use it. He leaves his stuff, like his toothbrush and his razor, like in her like toothpaste cup, you know, or her toothbrushing cup, stuff like that. And, you know, Carol can kind of hear her sister and Michael like having sex in the next room, and it like grosses her out. So she's like really unsettled, unnerved, disgusted by this guy's constant presence in their lives. Like he's always like staying over. And so it's like a real, I don't know, it's not even like an imposition, but it just makes her really, really uncomfortable. And like I said, I don't really think I blame her all that much, because Michael is much like most of the men in this movie, a complete creep. Carol also has this guy who's like a suitor, and his name's Colin. Now, I'm not sure how clear it is, like if he had been like going out with her before or been pursuing her before, because it's almost like at the beginning of the movie, it's almost like she's like walking down the street and it's just this random dude like sees her out the window of a pub and is like, hey, I'm gonna get with that girl because she's beautiful, and just like kind of starts chasing her. But then like when they're talking, it almost kind of seems like they sort of know each other. But if they do, it's like he's totally really not getting the hint that she's not really into it. Because he just kind of keeps like pursuing her, and he's not a bad guy. Like he's like the least stalkery or obnoxious or rapey as any of the other dudes in this movie, but he's still very persistent, and he still just like keeps calling, and you know, we're going to have a date. You're coming to dinner with me. And he's very pushy. Even though she's clearly kind of like not, she doesn't have, you know, she's very introverted, so she doesn't really have the wherewithal to just go, hey, fuck off, buddy. So she just either kind of like is like, okay, whatever, or she just doesn't answer and just like walks off, which he kind of takes as tacit approval, I guess, because he like, you know, he asked her to like, we're going to go on this date. Well, he asked her this one night, let's go on a date tonight. And she's like, no, I'm having dinner with my sister. You know, she wants to stay home. You know, so he's like, well, tomorrow night then. And then he like sets it all up. And even though she doesn't answer, like she doesn't say yes or no, she just walks into the salon where she works. He takes it as her like saying yes. And then when she doesn't show up, he gets like mad at her. You know what I mean? So it's like, even though she didn't like agree to it, it's just, so he's very kind of like that. Just pushy, you know what I mean? Just pushy and kind of stalkery. And the thing about it too is that even though she's clearly, that there's clearly something the matter with her, and she's clearly not interested in him, he seems to just keep pursuing her. And then as the movie goes on, it's almost kind of like he becomes like completely smitten with her, even though he doesn't really seem to know her at all, because she doesn't really talk all that much and everything. But it seems like he's only like looking at the outside veneer of her, like she could be, because she's beautiful and because she doesn't talk that much and she's kind of like quiet and submissive. Maybe he's into that and he's like projecting things onto her. I don't know. It's like it could be read in a lot of different ways. So basically all of this stuff is going on, and then it happens that her sister Helen and her boyfriend Michael are gonna go on vacation. They're going to Italy, and they're gonna be gone for like 10 days or 12 days, something like that. Now, Carol's kind of freaking out about this because I guess, like I said, she seems very, I don't want to say like regressed, but she seems kind of almost like a little bit childlike or very naive, or like I said, very sexually repressed. That's like a big theme of this movie. And she really doesn't want her sister to leave, probably because she suspects that being alone will not be good for her, which, spoiler alert, turns out to be the case. But of course, Helen is not going to let her sister, you know, dictate. We all need to have our own lives. She says stuff like that, which to an extent is true. But one thing that's kind of interesting about this movie is that even though there's clearly something the matter with Carol, like it becomes way, way, way more obvious as the movie goes on. And even though some people are sympathetic toward her, like even though like her employer at the salon, for example, you know, they don't like just say, you know, why didn't you show up? Like you're fired or whatever. They do try to understand, you know, what's the matter with you? What's going on? You know, maybe you're not feeling well. Maybe you should go home for the day and rest or whatever. So they are like sympathetic, but they're not really seeing the extent of her problem. So it's not like people are just being outright dismissive. They're just not really seeing how deep the problem goes, I guess. So I liked that aspect of it. So the sister and the boyfriend go off to Italy for however long. Now, one of the things that the sister says is that, oh, you know, our rent is late. I'm leaving the rent money on the table. So, you know, take it to the landlord tomorrow. Cause I told him that, cause he's being a dick and cause the rent was late. So she's like, so you have to take it over there tomorrow. Please don't forget. Now, as soon as the sister leaves, things start getting kind of weird, like up in the apartment. For one thing, what ended up happening was that the sister, Helen, was supposed to cook this rabbit that she had. But then because like the boyfriend came over too early and it's like she didn't have time to cook it and they just went out instead. So this rabbit is still like left in the refrigerator. I guess Carol is gonna take it out and cook it, but then she kind of gets distracted by some other stuff and just kind of leaves it there. So it just kind of like sits on the sideboard in the kitchen like rotting, which, as I said, not a not so subtle metaphor about her disintegrating mental state, right? This thing that she just left there and it's just getting more and more rotten and all these flies coming around it and everything like that. So, you know, that happens like over the course of the movie. She has a thing where she finds like Michael's stuff, like the boyfriend. Like I said, she finds his stuff in the apartment. She throws it away. She finds one of his nightshirts, like a, you know, wife beater tank top type of thing or undershirt. And she kind of like, it's weird because she's like simultaneously disgusted by men, but also maybe sort of fascinated by them because she has these really disturbing and these really unsettling rape dreams. And it's really creepy the way that they're done in the movie, because it's like every time they happen, it's always the same dude and he's always wearing like an undershirt, like the one of Michael's that she found in the apartment. But she smells it, you know, and then she like is kind of like, oh, she wants to smell it, but then she like feels like she wants to barf. So it's that kind of like weird, you know, that weird love hate type of thing, I guess, if you want to call it that. But she's like simultaneously repelled and attracted, I guess. So every time she has this like weird rape fantasy, it's always like this dude in an undershirt, like breaking into the apartment and just like, and he's kind of greasy and he's like jumping on her and stuff. And she's like freaking out about it. So that happens like several times. And every time it happens, there's no sound. It's like completely, completely silent. And I think that was like really, really effective, because the thing about this movie doesn't have, it has a little bit of a score, but not all that much. But much like David Lynch would do in Eraserhead, a lot of the unsettling kind of stuff about this movie comes from the sound design, because he uses you know, Roman Polanski uses noises like the phone ringing or a clock alarm or, you know, a clock ticking or like, there's this, their apartment is like next door to this church and like the bells are always ringing. And it's almost kind of like he's using noise as kind of like an invasive, like another invasive force. Just these regular noises that are amplified and just becoming like this irritating, like this annoyance that, you know, are kind of like getting into her head. So I really like that too. But like I said, the, you know, the rape dreams that she's having or, you know, visions or whatever they are always like completely silent. And it's like really, really creepy, but it's always like this same dude that like busts into her apartment. So basically through the rest of the film, like after the sister leaves, she just starts like, she kind of forgets. She leaves the rabbit out. It starts to rot. She doesn't really clean up anything. She's kind of just walking around in her nightgown. She forgets to go to work. When she does go, she's like completely spaced out, like completely checked out. And actually she ends up getting sent home because when she's doing like a manicure on this one woman, she ends up like cutting her finger open and it's like all bloody and everything. So they send her home. Like I said, they don't fire her. They're just kind of like, hey, you know, there's something the matter with you. So maybe you should just like go home and get that scene too. But, you know, ironically her being home because she doesn't have any friends and she doesn't have any social life, because of her deteriorating mental state. As I said, it's implied that it's schizophrenia, because she has visions, of men turning up in her apartment. She has really creepy visions of like hands reaching out of the walls to grab her, just stuff like that. Because of that, her being alone in the apartment just worsens it. It just like makes the cycle of madness like, you know, go faster and faster because she's completely isolated and nobody seems to realize, as I said, like the depth of it just because she looks so perfect on the outside. Now, what ends up happening is that her suitor, her would-be suitor, Colin, I guess he's been trying to call her and finally she just gets so annoyed with like the phone ringing all the time that she just like pulls it out of the wall. So at that point, he decides he's going to come over to the apartment. He starts knocking and she doesn't want to let him in because she's terrified. And he basically just like busts in and she's just like standing there in her nightgown and everything's a mess. And he's like, he's there, as I said, sort of, you know, proclaiming his everlasting love for her. Oh, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't stand not seeing you. You wouldn't answer the phone. It's like, you know, I think I'm in love with you, blah, blah, blah. And I was just, and she's just like standing there not saying anything. And I was like, dude, what are you even projecting on this poor girl? Because she has like literally said maybe 5 words to him. And so I think because she's beautiful on the outside, like he's made this whole like idealized version of what he thinks she's like, because obviously he doesn't have any idea what she's actually like, you know, and you'd think he would have gotten the hint like earlier in the movie, like when he tried to kiss her and she was just kind of like, yeah, no thanks. You know what I mean? But he really didn't. He just kept on at it. Spoiler alert, it ends up getting him killed because he busts into the apartment and is talking about how much he loves her. And she picks up a candlestick and basically bludgeons him to death with it. And then puts him in the in a bathtub like full of water. Then she kind of realizes what she's done, but at this point she's like way too far gone. So basically she's just kind of in this apartment with her horrible visions of like, you know, rapists and hands coming out of the walls. The walls start cracking and all this other kind of stuff, you know, cry. It's like I said, the imagery isn't subtle, but in some ways I think that it's being that simple makes it like a lot more effective. You know what I'm saying? Because you're kind of seeing the world the way she sees it and her perception is warped. So she just, you know, but just the way it's shot is like really, really cool. Like you can really see like her disintegrating mental state in the way that the shots are composed. So Colin is, you know, laying in the bathtub dead. Rabbits rotten in the kitchen, like always, like things are getting shitty around the place. You know, it's just like a total mess. She's just like wandering around like a zombie in her, nightgown. And then, while the door's still barricaded and everything like that, the landlord shows up wondering where the rent money is. So he also, busts in, he busts through the barricade. Then he's like, what the hell? You made like such a big fucking mess in here. And she's basically just like sitting there with her, you know, in her nightgown. And she's like, oh, well, you want my sister and she's not here. And he starts yelling at her about the rent. And she's like, oh, you know, here's the rent money. Here it is right here. And so she gives it to him and he seems like really surprised. But then he sees like the rotting rabbit and he's like, what the hell? It's like, why are you leaving? It's like, because it really smelled and there was all these flies. And he's like, no wonder you don't feel good. It's like with all this laying around in your apartment. And then, just like most of the other dudes in this movie, the creepy old landlord basically comes up to her and is like, hey, you know, I could forget about all this damage to the apartment if you do something for me or take care of me, I think is how he says it. And then he straight up tries to rape her. So as I said, even though clearly Carol is suffering from a mental illness, in a lot of ways, you can't really blame her. I mean, like the way that people treat her kind of goes a long way toward it. And like I said, I think that there is an implied an explanation for why she's like that as well, like later on in the film, which I'll get to in a minute. But so yeah, so the landlord basically straight up tries to rape her, at which point she takes Michael's razor, which he had left in the apartment, and slices him up with it. So she's basically like on a killing spree now. And she's, as I said, so far gone that it's probably too late for anybody to help her at this point. So after all this horrific shit happens, finally, Helen, the sister, and Michael, the boyfriend, finally come home. And when they come home, they found, obviously, the door is busted open. They come into the apartment. It's a complete wreck. It looks like somebody just completely trashed it. You know, the couch is turned over and everything like that. And then Helen goes into the bathroom and finds Colin's body in the bathtub and, understandably, freaks the fuck out. At which point, Michael goes to phone the police. They find out that the phone cord has been cut, so he has to go to a neighbor's apartment to call the cops because before cell phones, y'all, this was 1965, so you had to, like, find a telephone. So he takes off. And basically, so then all the neighbors just come wandering into the apartment being like, hey, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like all the neighbors in the building. Hey, what's going on in here? So it's like they come in and then Helen's, the sister, she goes into, I guess it's Carol's room. So she goes in there to sit because she doesn't want to look at Colin's body in the tub. And then Carol's hand just kind of flops out from under the bed. So they move the bed. And at the end, Michael, the boyfriend, comes back and says, you know, I called the police and the ambulance and everything like that. And he ends up, like, Carol is still alive, but she's basically, like, catatonic at this point. So in a weird, I guess, ironic sort of twist, like, Michael kind of picks her up, almost like he's rescuing her, even though he was a skeeze. And honestly, I think, I don't know if I don't, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I thought that it was maybe implied that Michael had raped her at some point or tried to rape her at some point, because it's always, it was interesting to me that whenever Carol has one of her rape hallucinations, it's always a dude, it's not him, but it's always a dude that sort of looks like him and is wearing that undershirt, like the one that he left in the apartment. So I don't know, because he did actually seem to have an interest in her in the sense that he would talk to Helen about her sometimes, like, you know, what's the matter with her? She needs this, that, and the other. So I don't know if there was something going on there or if that was just the way that Carol was perceiving it. I'm not real sure. But yeah, so at the end, it's almost cut like he kind of rescues her by like picking her up and taking her out. And then the last shot of the film, which a lot of people have pointed as kind of like the meaning of it, maybe. The last shot of the film is kind of like a panning like over a lot of the stuff in the apartment. And then it stops on this family photograph, which I think they showed briefly like earlier in the movie, if I'm remembering correctly. And then the photo like closes in on, it's like a family picture, and then in the back is what you're led to believe is the young Carol. It's like a little, a young blonde girl, probably, I don't know, maybe 12 or something like that. And she's kind of like set apart from the other family members, and she's not looking at the camera, and she's not smiling. And in fact, the look on that girl's face is horrifying, and it's like one of the most creepy things in this movie, and it just gets closer and closer. It either looks like it could, I guess you could just say it just looks like crazy eyes, but a lot of people have pointed out, you know, she almost looks like she's staring furiously at a male figure that's on the other side of the photo. So a lot of people have said that this probably implies that the reason that Carol had all of these sexual repression issues, all of this hatred, disgust, fear of men, was maybe because a family member, perhaps her father, had molested her as a child and she had never gotten over the trauma, which actually would make a lot of sense because she really does have, it's not just a case of her being shy or introverted or anything like that. She is straight up disgusted by men. She is straight up terrified of them. And like I said, in some ways, you know, at least the ones portrayed in the movie, she probably has a right or has like, you know, a good reason for that, because a lot of the men in this movie are like creepy and super overt and stalkery and shit like that. Maybe it's maybe less so in the 60s than now, like, because I know that there were some cultural differences or some, you know, differences of time. You could get away with more in the 60s than you could nowadays. But I do kind of feel like the implication was being, because she was a beautiful woman and she was moving through the world, that was kind of like the only thing that people saw of her. So they didn't really see the damage that she, you know, her damaged psyche, I guess, because no one really knew her. All they saw was like the outer shell. So that's why I thought it was really interesting that Roman Polanski cast Catherine Deneuve, who, like, at the time, who is, like, obviously, like I said, an impossibly beautiful woman, and she just looks completely perfect, even when she's completely losing her shit and just, like, walking around the apartment in her bare feet and her nightgown, she still looks gorgeous. And I think that was a deliberate choice, because, like I said, that's kind of, it's almost kind of like that's all you see. That's like the surface level. But obviously there was a lot of other shit going on underneath the surface that no one bothered to look at. They didn't know, like, about the trauma she'd gone through before. They didn't know about this severe, like, mental illness that she had. And I thought that was, like, a really interesting directorial choice. So as I said, this is, again, easily one of my favorite horror movies of the 60s. I really like I said, even though Roman Polanski is a shitty person, he's actually made some pretty awesome movies, this being one of them. And watching this movie again for this review, because I've seen it a couple of times previously, although it's been many years since I've seen it, seeing it again, it just made me appreciate it all the more. I was just like, I honestly want to say, I know this might be a controversial statement, I think I like it a little bit better than Rosemary's Baby, although I love Rosemary's Baby, don't get me wrong. But honestly, I think because I've seen Rosemary's Baby so many times, so maybe its impact has sort of lessened a little bit over time. But this movie, Repulsion, and The Tenant, I think I just like them a little bit better. They seem creepier to me. I feel like Rosemary's Baby has a little bit of, like, black humor to it, which I like. But Repulsion is just straight up, there's nothing funny about this movie at all. It's just such a very, very unsettling, creepy ass. There's, like, some really creepy, unsettling imagery. And it's just, like, a tragic story, because the character of Carol is obviously very, very damaged and very, very troubled and very, very mentally ill, but she's still an understandable, she's very, still a very sympathetic protagonist, and seeing things through her eyes almost makes it creepier, because it's like you're in her shoes, you're seeing how she sees the world, and it's terrifying. And I think that was, like, really, really effectively done. Now, this movie, interestingly, like I said, it was only his second movie, and it was made for under £1 million. As I said, it was shot in London, that's where it's set. And had won several, or I think it won a BAFTA, it won all kind of stuff, and has, like, pretty much universal acclaim. The Criterion Collection version of it, I think, came out several years ago, and I've heard that the transfer is gorgeous. I watched it on Amazon Prime, and I think that might be the same transfer, and it, indeed, it does look beautiful. It kind of, like, I guess it has, like, some similarities with Psycho as well, but it's weird because even though Polanski uses some of the same tropes as Hitchcock, he uses them, like, in a different way. Like I said, this one is very, very clearly from a female perspective. You're just seeing everything from her point of view, the way she perceives everything. Whether that's objective reality or not, you're not really sure. And I think in the context of the movie, it doesn't really matter, because the context of the movie being, this is how she sees the world and she's descending into madness. And as I said, you can still empathize with her, because given that last shot, you're led to believe that probably she was molested as a child, and that was probably the root of her trauma that she's never been able to get over. But it's just, you know, it's just a very creepy, sad film. Beautifully shot. Like I said, the sound design's amazing. So if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. It's a classic from the 1960s. And especially if you like some of the later films that I think were kind of inspired a little bit by it, by like Eraserhead and things like that, then definitely you should do yourself a favor and check it out. And as I said, it's on Amazon Prime right now as of this recording, so go watch it. And if you've seen it, let's have a discussion about it in the comments. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.